Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1169 of the Juice Box Podcast. In today's episode, the person I'm interviewing will remain anonymous, but we're going to call her Damsel. Damsel is 31 years old. She's had type 1 diabetes for just a couple of years, and there are three previous generations of type 1 in her family. Damsel was originally diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. She has seizures with something they call idiopathic epilepsy. And I need to warn you that there's going to be conversations about abuse, both at the hands of her father and at an ex-partner. She's going to talk about having been raped. So please be careful while you're listening. Please don't forget that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at CozyEarth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code JUICEBOX at checkout. That's JUICEBOX at checkout to save 40% at CozyEarth.com. If you have type 1 diabetes or you are the caregiver of someone with type 1, please take the survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. It takes 10 minutes and you'll be helping with type 1 research. t1dexchange.org/juicebox. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing together people who are redefining what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Mark. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 28. He's 47 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story, and then at the very end of the episode, you can hear my entire mini interview with Mark. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and check out the Medtronic Champion hashtag on social media. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Eversense. The Eversense CGM is more convenient, requiring only one sensor every 6 months. It offers more flexibility with its easy-on, easy-off smart transmitter and allows you to take a break when needed. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox. This show is sponsored today by the glucagon that my daughter carries, Gvoke HypoPen. Find out more at GvokeGlucagon.com/juicebox.
Hi, I'm Damsel.
Do you have type 1?
Yes.
You do. How old were you when you were diagnosed?
It was only a couple of years ago. So I think I was like 28.
Okay.
29.
What are you now? 31-ish?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Was it a surprise? Meaning, do you see any type 1 in your family or other autoimmune stuff in your family?
It was not a surprise to me. It was a surprise to my doctor. I'm a fourth generation type 1, so...
How did it surprise your doctor then? That's funny. Did he know your family history or she?
No, she didn't really know. I didn't know at the time that was super relevant. So I was diagnosed as type 2 at first.
I see. And how long did that go on before? Well, I guess first tell me who, like in your family line, who else has type 1? There's three others.
Yeah. Like a great uncle, my late grandfather, my aunt, and then me.
Wow. How about, does your mom or dad have any autoimmune stuff like celiac or thyroid stuff?
Yeah, my mom has low thyroid. It's probably Hashimoto's.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the people that you talked about, great uncle, that kind of stuff, they are on your mom's side?
Yes.
Okay, got it. So what was your first symptom? What got you thinking something was wrong?
Well, my symptoms started when I was a lot younger. When I was 16 or 17, I started having seizures. Hmm. So I think it started with like hypoglycemia or at least like a big crash.
You were having seizures when you were 16. Was that ever diagnosed? Like, did a doctor ever tell you what they thought it was?
Oh, yeah. They thought it was idiopathic epilepsy.
Oh, epilepsy that they can't explain.
Yes.
How lovely. And did that go on for long?
Yeah, that went on until I got pregnant with my daughter and then ended up on insulin at that time for a short time.
Oh, how old were you when you got pregnant?
25.
So you had these seizures that nobody could explain for 9 years?
Yes.
Oh, wow. And then when you were pregnant, you got gestational diabetes?
I mean, that's what they thought. When I was 19, I got some blood work done, and my A1C was like 6.4. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you're really young to be pre-diabetic. I wonder what's going on here. And then just kind of brushed it aside.
So do you think you had LADA for all that time? Like the slow onset type one where you, it's sort of, your body's still fighting the fight, but it's going the wrong way. No one's ever said that to you before, huh?
In a sense, but I mean, I was under 21 when this really started happening. So
yeah.
Is it LADA? Is it type one with a weird presentation? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, something that takes that long, I think falls into the LADA category, but neither here nor there. So you're 25, pregnant, using insulin, but then when the pregnancy ends, they take you off the insulin?
Yeah, because I was back to like a 6.4, but I was also like eating nothing. Mm.
And then when you're finally diagnosed, you know, with type 1, or no, I guess they started looking at it as type 2 first.
Right. Then we went to all the type 2 meds.
Metformin, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. All the way up to the one that starts with the A that they really don't like to use because it causes liver issues.
What, do you know what it's called?
Oh, gosh. I can't remember.
I'm now going to test my Googling skills. Ready? Watch this. If we get this, amazing. Diabetes. Is it a pill?
Yes.
Okay. Diabetes pill. Liver. Nothing with an A popped up. Damn it. I had such high hopes for that. I don't know why. Shoot. Okay. I don't think we're going to find it that way.
No. All right. No, I'd have to look it up.
Yeah. They didn't call
it like medical records, but
they didn't call it an anti-diabetic drug, did they?
I don't remember.
Okay. That's fine. It's the only thing that popped up here. So, okay. So you treat that way for a while. That's obviously not the case. Eventually you get a type 1 diagnosis. Did you go into DKA or did things just get like more and more difficult to manage the way you were doing it?
You know, I think I had a few bouts of it, like when I got pregnant and then was diagnosed as gestational, and then other times when I was sick, but, you know, not knowing is like, if it's mild, you know, why go to the hospital? Just, you know.
Can you describe a little bit what it's like to live in that kind of like limbo with your health, not really knowing what's going on? Treatments aren't doing what they're supposed to do and you still go on?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I didn't really go on. It was almost entirely disabling.
Tell me.
Yeah. I mean, I would work part-time and, you know, just try to cover things up or not say anything about it until, you know, you're eligible for FMLA and accommodations and everything, you know, kind of build a rapport before, you know.
Oh, I see.
Hopefully they find out.
So you're
there's been a few times where, yeah, I passed out or had a seizure from what I now know is low blood sugar and I've been fired.
That's crazy, isn't it? Like, and so you're getting low blood sugar just on like oral medications?
Well, yes, when I was on oral medications, but I mean, even before I was diagnosed where I was having that crash for some weird reason, mm-hmm. and then going into the seizures.
Yeah. It's all very, I never, you know, people bring this up sometimes, the having seizures, it feels like low blood sugar, but they eventually become type 1, but they weren't then, or they weren't using insulin. We never come to a real good answer about how that happens. It's really something. I keep waiting for somebody to be like, a doctor explained it to me, but it doesn't seem to happen that much.
Yeah, well, there's one antibody where it causes you to have hypoglycemia first. Hmm. And then that can trigger the others, from my understanding.
Wow. Okay. That's a decent explanation. Who told you about that?
Dr. Google.
He knows everything, except for that medicine we were looking for earlier that he didn't know about.
Right.
Today's podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. Boasting a 6-month sensor, the Eversense CGM offers you these key advantages. Distinct on-body vibe alerts when high or low. A consistent and exceptional accuracy over a 6-month period. And you only need 2 sensors per year. No longer will you have to carry your CGM supplies with you. You won't have to be concerned about your adhesive not lasting, accidentally knocking off a sensor, or wasting a sensor when you have to replace your transmitter. That's right, there's no more weekly or bi-weekly hassles of sensor changes, not with the Eversense CGM. It's implantable, and it's accurate. Eversensecgm.com/juicebox. The Eversense CGM is the first and only long-term CGM. Eversense sits comfortably right under the skin in your upper arm, and it lasts way longer than any other CGM sensor. Never again will you have to worry about your sensor falling off before the end of its life. So if you want an incredibly accurate CGM that can't get knocked off and won't fall off, you're looking for the Eversense CGM. Eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Right now, we're going to hear from a member of the Medtronic Champion community. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. And this is Mark.
I used injections for about 6 months, and then my endocrinologist in the Navy recommended a pump.
How long had you been in the Navy?
8 years up to that point.
I've interviewed a number of people who have been diagnosed during service, and most of the time they're discharged. What happened to you?
I was medically discharged. Yeah, 6 months after my diagnosis.
Was it your goal to stay in the Navy for your whole life, your career?
It was. Yeah. In fact, I think a few months before my diagnosis, my wife and I had that discussion about, you know, staying in for the long term. And, you know, we'd made the decision, despite all the hardships and time away from home, that was what we loved the most.
Was the Navy a lifetime goal of yours?
Lifetime goal. I mean, as my earliest childhood memories were flying, being a fighter pilot.
How did your diagnosis impact your lifelong dream?
It was devastating. Everything I had done in life, everything I'd worked up to that point was just taken away in an instant. I was not prepared for that at all.
What does your support system look like?
Friends, your family, caregivers, you know, for me, the Medtronic Champions community, you know, all those resources that are out there help guide the way, but then help keep abreast on, you know, the new things that are coming down the pipe and to give you hope for eventually that we can find a cure.
Stick around at the end of this episode to hear my entire conversation with Mark. And you can hear more stories from Medtronic Champions and share your own story at MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. Okay, so what leads you to an absolute type 1 diagnosis?
Let's see. I was having terrible periods. Mm-hmm. I would go really low and I was just bleeding profusely all the time. That alone would make me pretty unsteady on my feet.
Yeah.
And sometimes pass out. So we were trying to see if I would be eligible for a hysterectomy. And they're like, well, you know, your blood sugar is over 6.5 for the A1C. So right now you're not eligible. You need to go see an endocrinologist and get this under control. Hmm.
This is after you've had babies, your periods like this?
Yes.
No kidding. Have you looked into it? I mean, PCOS, hormonal imbalance, has anything like that turned up?
Yeah, no, they checked all my hormones and they were fine. And they even did a biopsy of my uterus and didn't find anything. Tissue around when they were in there, they didn't find anything.
Yeah, they call it unremarkable.
Yes.
Are your parents, that's really helpful, isn't it? You go through a whole procedure and you come out and they're like, we didn't find anything. You're like, great. Thanks a lot. Are your periods still like that today?
Well, I don't have a uterus anymore, so I don't physically have a period. I still need to use less basal insulin around that time of the month, but it's like, when is that actually happening? I don't know.
So you did end up eventually having a hysterectomy?
Yes.
Did that fix your problem?
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. That's a really bold step to have to take. So you really were without answers for a while, if you were doing that, I imagine.
Yeah, I was without answers for maybe a year. Mm-hmm. I had already had my tubes removed because people are crazy for having more than one kid. No offense.
So you were trying to like address the heavy periods and they started with removing your fallopian tubes?
No, that was totally elective.
Oh, okay.
I signed up to have that done, and I got it done like 15 hours after my daughter was born.
Oh, no kidding. I don't know that I've heard of that before. Is that a procedure that has a name?
Just removing the fallopian tubes.
And that's strictly for like pregnancy stuff.
Yeah, that was so I wouldn't get pregnant again.
Gotcha. You didn't enjoy being pregnant?
No, definitely not. And, you know, because I didn't know what was going on before with the seizures and stuff, is like, I was like, you know, right now I can only work part-time. How am I going to have more than one kid and support that off of, you know, part-time?
Yeah.
Because I spent 9 years essentially thinking that that was going to happen to me, where, you know, I'd just be in this unknown, somewhat disabled, somewhat working state.
And Damsel, tell me, like, you said this earlier, I didn't dig into it, but you were having such trouble, like, existing that you'd get little part-time jobs and try to hold on to them long enough that you could get FMLA because you knew you couldn't keep up going to work. Is that about
right?
Yeah. And how about today? How are you feeling today?
Well, today I've been in construction for like 3 years now, and I've had different employers, but it's all been full time.
Good for you. What kind of work do you do?
I'm a laborer.
Nice.
Right now, when I go back to work anyway, I will do everything the carpenters feel like they're too good to do.
How nice. but I mean, that's good. That's hard work, and you're not having any trouble with it, right?
Yeah. When I have access to a Dexcom, it's great. You know, if I do end up going a little low, I like to call it at 80 in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, I get off the ladder or the platform or get off the machinery and, you know, just
make sure you're
eat
okay.
Some candy and find something a little bit more mundane to do.
So is this seasonal work? Because you said when I go back to work, and I know some people who do work like this, so there's times a year where it falls off. Are you in that spot now?
I took a voluntary layoff to spend time with my daughter. Oh. She was having a really hard time transitioning to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to be there to, you know, get her ready and then fully support her while she makes the transition.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's lovely. And it was available, so it was easy to do, I guess. That's not bad. Are you married or divorced, separated?
No, never married.
Never married. Are you co-parenting with somebody or are you a single mom?
I'm single.
Yeah. Your daughter's with you full time?
Yes.
Okay. How do you handle that when she's that young and you have to go to work? Sitters or?
I'm in the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of like in-home and 24/7 daycares.
Yeah. And you're able to do that.
Yeah. So I'm able to be super flexible and
nice.
You know, she's got kids of all ages that she gets to make friends with and it's nice.
But she didn't like going to kindergarten?
I wouldn't say that. I think because I had this just kind of wild schedule for raising somebody so young,
mm-hmm.
she didn't get to go to preschool.
I see. So it was just from like daycare, where maybe it's a little like Lord of the Flies, right into like structure.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
She's like, wait, I gotta just sit here the whole day? You kidding me? I get that. I still wouldn't be good at that, by the way. If I didn't have this job, specific job to do, if you sat me at this desk and you were like, just stay here for a while, I'd be like, I gotta go. I can't just stay here. If I didn't have something to do that I knew was very important, I'd have trouble too. So how long did it take her to kind of work through it?
Well, she's still working through it, but you know, this week I'm hoping she'll make it to all of her classes.
Gotcha. No, I'm glad you're able to be with her and try to get it worked out.
Yeah.
That's really nice. So you reached out to be on the show for a specific reason, but then right before we started talking, you were like, we might not talk about that so much. So tell me what it is you want to talk about.
Well, I feel like it might be more helpful to talk about, you know, losing your housing and being homeless and like actually fleeing domestic violence.
Well, yeah, I didn't realize that any of that had happened to you. So tell me about that. Where did that issue start?
Well, you know, definitely not the first time that I've been homeless, but right now, me and my daughter are in an emergency shelter.
Okay. Where were you prior to that?
Before that, we were car.
For how long?
I want to say a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks.
Okay. And where were you before you had to move into your car?
Yeah, I had gotten a roommate and she thought she could leave her ex, but she ended up reconciling with him and he was very abusive. Mm-hmm. And I can't have that around my daughter. And it's very, very hard to kick somebody out in Washington State.
Okay.
So I ended up choosing to leave.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you and this...
Really no backup plan.
So you and this woman were gonna room together and that's how you're going to be able to handle things. But then she brings her abusive partner back into your home.
Yes.
Oh, and then you bugged out because of that.
Right.
And you've been the victim of abuse in the past?
Yes.
Is that with your baby's father or somebody else?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So you guys were together for a while?
Yeah, maybe 6 years. Okay. On and off. You know, it takes a while to leave for good.
Was it abusive the entire time?
It was great the first year, maybe year and 3 months. Mm-hmm. You know, and then after that, you know, they don't have to keep up such a facade, you know.
He felt comfortable, stop pretending that that's not who he was. And then if this is difficult, like I'm adjusting on the fly here, damsel, because I didn't know this was like in your notes. This wasn't in your notes, but so if I say something that's insensitive or, you know, hard for you, please just stop me. What does the abuse look like? Is it verbal? Is it physical? Is it a mix? If you take insulin or sulfonylureas, you are at risk for your blood sugar going too low. You need a safety net when it matters most. Be ready with Gvoke HypoPen. My daughter carries Gvoke HypoPen everywhere she goes because it's a ready-to-use rescue pen for treating very low blood sugar in people with diabetes ages 2 and above that I trust. Low blood sugar emergencies can happen unexpectedly, and they demand quick action. Luckily, Gvoke HypoPen can be administered in 2 simple steps, even by yourself in certain situations. Show those around you where you store Gvoke HypoPen and how to use it. They need to know how to use Gvoke HypoPen before an emergency situation happens. Learn more about why Gvoke HypoPen is in Arden's Diabetes Toolkit at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. Gvoke shouldn't be used if you have a tumor in the gland on the top of your kidneys called a pheochromocytoma, or if you have a tumor in your pancreas called an insulinoma. Visit gvokeglucagon.com/risk for safety information.
Definitely a mix, and I'd say like a buildup. I don't know. I guess if you imagine the abuse cycle where, you know, things are okay, then there's some sort of argument or escalation, the abuse happens, and then there's back to like honeymoon, reconciliation, love bombing. And it just kind of repeats like that, but it's more like a spiral than a true cycle because mm-hmm. the abuse keeps getting more intense. And then the love bombing and reconciliation gets less intense.
Yeah. The first time it happens when there's something abusive that happens and then all of a sudden it's, I'm sorry and I love you and all that stuff. Do you think, oh, it's just a mistake the first time? Or are you immediately like, there's something really wrong here, but I'll try again?
For me, I think the first time it got to the realm of physical, he had broken some glass. I think it was a bottle of alcohol to try and intimidate me.
Like in the movies? Like crack it on the side of the counter thing? Or just
it against the wall.
Oh, I see. Like make a big loud sound. I got you. Good. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had a ridiculous image in my head of him cracking the bottle in the corner and going, I'll stick you. So like out of a bad 70s film or something. But okay. So just like violence to try to like capture the moment. Just throws this glass.
Yeah. And he just was talking down to me and just belittling me, making me feel awful and scared. So I did leave for the night, but, you know, he got in contact with me and was like, oh, I love you. I'm not going to do that again. It really wasn't that serious. You know, maybe you're not remembering this right.
Oh, that's nice. Was this before or after your daughter's born?
Before.
Before. Okay. Is it safe to say you didn't get pregnant on purpose?
No, definitely not.
Does his actions and the fact that you ended up having a baby and you weren't planning on it, did that have a lot to do with why you had the procedure to stop yourself and be able to get pregnant again? Or was that more about your health stuff?
That's a really deep question. I'd say it was more for myself. You know, at that time, I just didn't know if I'd be able to support another kid and, you know, wasn't super interested in doing that. And it was like, you know, at this point, no one's going to change my mind about it. It's just, you know, if I get pregnant again, I'm going to cry the whole time.
Can I ask, in that time before your pregnancy, were there drugs or alcohol mixed with this, or was it just purely the violent stuff?
Yeah, there was some alcohol from time to time, but, you know, he chose to be this way.
How long did you know him before you were together?
Maybe 6 months.
Yeah. How old were you when you got together?
I was 18.
Is there something in your background growing up that makes it understandable that you were like, I'm not trying to say you sought out like this kind of person, but like that makes you gravitate to this situation? Like, is there something that happened to you when you were younger?
Yeah, that's called, what is it called? It's called revictimization.
You did have a problem when you were younger as well?
Yes.
Are you able to tell me about that?
I mean, I won't get a whole lot into it, but yeah, I did experience some abuse as a child.
Describe the roller coaster ride between you leaving, you getting housing with a friend, and you being in your car. What's the length of time from start to from the first step of that to where you are now?
Oh my gosh. Quite some time.
Months, years?
Yeah, I'd say almost a decade, because, you know, I would try to get away from him multiple times and just always came back.
You came back or he came back?
Both. You know, he'd leave and come back, or I'd leave and then he'd seek me out and I'd agree to come back.
Can you tell me what was the thing that pushed you to take him back or to go back when those things happened?
You know, it was very comforting, and I felt very loved when he wanted to reconcile. And there was also the gaslighting, like, maybe you're not remembering this right, or, you know, that's not what happened. I remember it happening this way. So it was like, maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe I just left him because I just lost it, you know?
And that worked.
Maybe it was me.
That gaslighting works. You do find yourself questioning your remembrance of it.
Oh, yeah. It's very real.
Wow. Okay. I'm sorry. Did he ever hit your daughter?
No. So I got pregnant kind of in the middle of me leaving. I went to go get my things and he was drinking and just talking in circles and trying to get me to be with him and just really wouldn't let me leave. And at the end of it, he sexually assaulted me.
I see. Wow, that's difficult. I mean, in the moment, obviously, but I assume moving forward, are you able to separate that event from who your daughter is and your relationship with her, or is that hard?
It took a lot of therapy, probably a year, before I could really separate it. But at the same time, I was also very bonded with her. Like, it didn't stop from having a healthy relationship with my child.
Yeah. Did you ever consider having an abortion?
No,
that's not something you would do no matter what.
At the time, no. Now, you know, not to get too political, but now that Roe v. Wade is overturned, I'm seeing some of the situations and the fallout to where, like, is absolutely necessary, or, you know, almost necessary. So in those situations today, absolutely.
So I have a difficult question that I don't know the answer to. I'm not even sure if it's a good question, but is there, it doesn't sound like you have a comparison. I'm thankful for that, but I'm finding myself wondering, is the being sexually abused, I mean, you're talking about being raped by him, right?
Right.
Right. When it's a person you know, would it be different if it was somebody I knew versus somebody I didn't know? And I don't know why I'm asking, but I'm wondering if that had any impact on how you dealt with the pregnancy and moving forward, et cetera.
Yeah, I can't say that I know. And I think it would really be more individual.
You see what I'm like kind of getting at, though? Like, I mean, it's horrible in the obvious. I mean, I've never experienced it, but I'm imagining it's horrible in the moment, obviously, and the aftermath of it is probably terrible. But when you're weeks and months down the line from it, is there a part of your brain that's like, well, you know, I've had sex with this guy before? Like, is it, like, do you know what I mean? Like, does your brain start making up excuses for why it's not so horrible? I guess that's my question.
Yes, I. That's what happened to me anyway.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was imagining. Because then I can see how your brain could try to make you feel better by kind of telling you those things. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. Maybe that's just a thing to protect yourself, but which, you know, your body does a lot of things to protect you. So maybe that's actually helpful. If you can't afford a place to live right now, how are you managing your diabetes supplies and raising your daughter? How do you do that stuff?
Well, right now I'm MDI. I'm working on getting things okay with the pharmacy so I can get the Omnipod 5. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once the pharmacy figures that out, there's like a health savings program or something through Omnipod.
Okay.
Where if you have insurance, they can pick up the slack essentially for a year.
Okay. And kind of help you get on your feet a little bit.
Right.
Is that the play? Like, are you trying to get your own place or do you need another roommate?
I will be getting my own place.
Good for you.
If I was working, you know, I probably would have been in a hotel for a month and, you know, gotten a place right mm-hmm. after that. But now it's been so long to where I need to wait to get enough pay stubs.
Yeah. How old's your daughter now? I'm sorry. She's what, 5?
Yes.
Yeah. How do you explain the living in the car part? Do you turn it into a game or how do you handle that?
Yeah, I told her, you know, our home became unsafe and so we had to leave and it's not her fault and that we were going to go camping for a little while.
Is it a big car or are you guys really smushed in there?
No, it's a sedan.
Okay. And then, but it didn't last long because you're in a shelter now. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. And it's not what you would imagine a shelter being. This is like a set of 3 log cabins, like deep in the woods outside of Seattle. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. Like each place is like 5,000 square feet or something.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's like a charity or like, how does that set up?
Yeah, it's set up like, I guess, like a regular house, you know, it's just a log cabin and there's different rooms for that meet different needs for the families. Like my room came furnished with dressers and 2 beds and it even has a crib in it for some reason. I think it's just harder to move the crib than to
tell somebody there's going to be a crib in your room, even though you don't need it. Well, who pays for that, though? Like who sets this all up?
It's through a nonprofit, so, you know, they get various grants and...
It's wonderful. It really is lovely. Do you have an amount of time you're allowed to stay, or is it until you can get yourself going?
Most shelters, there will be, you know, some sort of, like, time limit or expectation. This one is kind of like as long as you need, but they have a whole program. So, you know, they do case management once a week and then twice a week they have like what they call a goals meetup. So you're not just sitting there doing nothing. You're working on getting stability and then working on getting housing.
I see. Can I ask you, I almost said, can I ask you a personal question? But that seems silly after all this. They've all been pretty personal questions. How much money, if it fell out of the sky, would change your situation?
Well, for me, near Seattle and wanting to stay in Seattle, maybe $1,500.
What would that money do?
Yeah, that would make it easier to buy insulin for sure. But it'd also be a good start to a deposit and first month's rent.
Okay. How much is that, the first month's rent and the deposit?
You know, it varies. The deposits are a lot lower here. They're like $300 or $400 for some reason. And then the rent can be as low as like $1,500.
Okay.
But, you know, I do have a little savings and I've been kind of living off that.
Yeah. When are you heading back to the job site?
Early October, just a week or two.
Oh, you're getting there. Okay. I'm just trying to give some context to it because everyone imagines money and what it takes to do a thing, they imagine it from their situation. You know what I mean? Like, how much would it take them to get into a place? And those numbers can just greatly vary. I find it interesting, and I appreciate you answering the question. Thank you. Do you ever see yourself dating again or trying to find a partner, or is that something you're very sour on?
Oh, no, I definitely want to find a partner, you know, maybe even get married one day.
Okay, that's wonderful. Your Tyler early experience hasn't turned you off to that idea.
No, I'm not bitter about it. But like I said, I've done a lot of therapy, so it has helped.
Yeah. Talk therapy with a psychologist?
You know, talk therapy wasn't super helpful for me. Psychoeducation, CBT, and EMDR.
Rapid eye movement?
Yes.
Yeah. You're like the 10th person who's brought that up on the podcast. Of all the things I never thought I'd hear about, I hear about that a lot from people. It's really interesting. And that, how was that helpful? What was it? What did it help you move through past?
It really helped me just process, you know, I feel like the memories were kind of trapped somewhere in my mind to where they hadn't really been processed, but then also like stored in my body by like aches and pains. And I was able to kind of really tap into what those sensations were and what those feelings were, and how they related to the memory.
Wow. How long did that process go on for?
Well, the EMDR was probably like 9 months.
Mm-hmm. No, that's not bad. I mean, honestly, 9 months to work on something to be able to help you like that is pretty amazing. What kind of a doctor helps with that? Or is it a therapist?
It's a therapist. Usually one that's graduated their program and is trauma-informed and then has taken so many hours.
I see.
Specifically related to that therapy.
Wow. That's wonderful work they're doing. It's really, I mean, you've been through, I mean, Damso, do you know, like, if like, you know how much you've been through, right? Like, it's not like you don't lose the impact of it because it happened to you.
You know, I'm sympathetic for other people, but for me, it's kind of like at this point, you know, it's a thing that happened.
It's amazing. I mean, as you were saying it, I'm like, she's going to say it's just the thing that happened to me. But I, being the person who's listening to it, like we're 45 minutes into our conversation. I've never met you before this. Like it's an astonishing story. And over a short period of time to a young person there's a lot there, you know. It's really crazy that you're doing as well as you are. Do you feel like you're doing well?
You know, once I get back to work, I'll be doing very well. Good. You know, I'm 3 years into this apprenticeship, and so I'm almost finished with it. Then I'll be making some really good money. It's just, you know. Mm-hmm. This situation came up and then my daughter needed me home. So,
yeah, no, I understand. So I think it's a brave decision, especially while you're getting back on your feet and you're making strides to see that you need to still take a break to help your daughter I think that's really very mature. You know what I mean? Like, because you don't strike me as a person who's like, oh, my kid's having a problem. I can take 2 weeks off. Yay. Like, it feels like you really made what you thought was the best decision for her.
Right.
Yeah. Good for you. Where do you get decent parenting skills from? I guess you got to develop them on your own, right?
No, I wouldn't advise that. There's tons of programs for like new parents. When my daughter was born, I did a program called a nurse partnership program, where a nurse would come in home and do some education, you know, towards the end of my pregnancy and then all the way through age two. And we would meet first every week. And then, you know, eventually it went down to like once a month at the end of the program. But I learned so much from that program. And, you know, there's little things that I didn't know that they were able to educate me on, so I didn't, you know, mess it up.
So how did you have the wherewithal to do that? Like, so you, I mean, we're talking around it, but you didn't grow up with great parents. Is that right?
They were super into my education and really supported me that way.
Mm-hmm.
But they lost their shit, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wasn't the easiest child either, but you know, I feel like that's what most abuse stems from, like parent to child,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, the parent is trying to discipline the child and absolutely loses it and hurts the child.
Yeah. And that happened to you.
Yes.
Right. And now, so now you're, I mean, not that people need to be reminded, but now you're having a baby that came from your assault, and you want to be a good mom and you don't really know how. So you have the wherewithal to go find services that help you with that stuff. Like, that's a really mature is not the right word. That's a really thoughtful decision. Like, so you had, am I right? You consciously thought, I'm not going to be good at this. I need somebody to help me and I don't have any guidance.
Well, I don't know if anybody's great at parenting.
Well, I was going to say, I think everyone should do this, but I was just wondering how it got to you. That's all.
Yeah. You know, I did think, you know, some support would be better. You know, this is my first and my last child. So, you know, I do need to be intentional.
Yeah. You should be congratulated for that. I'm going to do it. So that is a wonderful decision. And I'm thrilled that you thought that through the way you did and made it. Good for you. Like, that's wonderful. I'm certain you don't see it that way, but I think it's a really big deal that through the haze of what your life was, that you could see that and take action and do it for another person. It's really great. That's just terrific. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that before, but I'd like to be one of the people who says, congratulations. That's well done.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. No, I hope that doesn't sound patronizing, because I don't mean it that way. That's unexpected for a person who's been through what you've been through to be able to stop and focus and make those kinds of decisions. It's really interesting. It feels like, well, let me ask this question. You said your education was important growing up. Like, how did you go to college, or what did you do in high school?
Yeah, I did pretty decent, you know, some C's, some B's when I was going through a hard time with my parents, and then moving out early, I had to drop out to work.
So your relationship was not the first time you had to flee a situation.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So you had to get out of your parents' house too early. You dropped out of high school to accomplish that?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
I did what's called an emancipation, where I became my own guardian, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, got an apartment and got a job, and trying to do high school on top of that just wasn't happening. So I dropped out. Got my GED a couple months later, I think.
Mm.
And then much later on, got a certificate in business administration.
Wow. You're really tough. Do you feel tough?
I feel like, you know, I've taken on a lot, you know, but there's definitely been some really dark places I've been as well.
No kidding. Ever been depressed?
Yeah, I have bipolar too.
Is that being managed, or how do you take care of that?
Yeah, I take medication, and I've recently started therapy again, just to, you know, get some stress management tools.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm stressed, I can fall into, you know, hypomanic or depressed more easily.
Yeah. Was there any bipolar with your parents?
Not that we're aware of. My mom has like treatment resistant depression.
Your mom does?
Yeah. Like she's had depression for like, oh my gosh, almost 30 years, which is kind of bizarre.
Did that physical abuse come from her or from your father?
My dad.
From your dad. And your dad, was your mom kind of like checked out?
She was supportive of him.
Oh, that's nice. How many kids did they have?
I have an older brother and a younger brother.
Are their experiences similar to yours with them or different?
No, they're different.
They didn't get kicked?
No, just the middle child.
Oh, that was lovely. So if you talked, have you talked to them about that? Your brothers?
My little brother. Yeah. My big brother was away at college at the time. So his outlook on it is like, I wasn't there. So I can't really say anything.
Does your little brother remember it the way you do?
Probably from a little bit different perspective, but you know, he does believe me. So yeah.
Is the gaslighting more difficult to deal with, damsel, because of the bipolar? Like, do you actually find yourself thinking maybe that did happen and I'm just not aware? Because then how do you...
I don't know. Because I was only diagnosed with bipolar maybe a year ago.
Okay.
Year and a half.
Because you know what I'm saying? Like, if... Now, I'm not trying to do it to you, but I'm like, I'm just trying to raise the question. Like, what if a person's saying something to you? I'm not saying that it's a good reason for someone to hit you or assault you or something like that. But in a lighter moment, like, what if something is said that was happened during like a manic episode that you don't remember, and then it feels like you're being gaslit when you're not, and then they use it to their advantage? Like it's a wormhole of problems. Like I don't know how to deal with that is I guess what I'm asking.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose they could try, but you know, bipolar too, you get hypomanic. You don't really get too like delusional.
I see. Do you have good recollection of what, so when things are not going the way you would want them to, you're still aware of what's happening?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Again, I don't know anything about it, so I'm just trying to figure it out. That's interesting. What do you think your most difficult challenge is health-wise day to day? Is it diabetes or is it mental health or?
I mean, they're so intertwined, right? Like.
Tell me how.
If I'm not doing well with my mental health, you know, my diabetic care is going to be just awful. Mm-hmm. And if I don't take care of my blood sugar the way I need to, that's going to affect my mental health too. It may even trigger either hypomanic or depressive. So
I see. Yeah, no, I can definitely see how that happens. And how do you manage with diabetes? So you said you have Dexcom when you can, I'm assuming when you can afford it or when you have access to it. So are you wearing it now, for example?
Yeah, I am. I don't know. I usually have access because what I've been doing is applying for Medicaid when I have a layoff. Mm-hmm. At that point, my income is zero.
Yeah.
And then just not updating them, which was super helpful on COVID because they just didn't check in on anybody for years.
Yeah, just let everybody go for a while. So you're managing MDI with Dexcom. What are your outcomes like? Like, what is your A1C and like, what are your goals during the day for your blood sugars?
It hasn't been great lately. You know, I've been able to get like a 5.9 most of the time, but my last A1C was like a 7.1.
What do you think happened? By the way, if the answer is I was living in my car, it would be completely reasonable. I'm just wondering, like, it's a big shift. So something changed.
Yeah, I think my mental health wasn't doing as good. There was some depressive episodes. Mm-hmm. We have been playing with this antipsychotic that helps bipolar, and that also increases like insulin resistance.
I see.
In everybody, not just diabetics.
Right.
Yeah, it's wild. You know, this medication can cause like pre-diabetes in non-diabetics.
Oh, wow.
Because it just has that much impact on blood sugar.
And does it just, in general, just difficult to take care of yourself while you're struggling with other stuff. Like, so like what happens? You don't pre-bolus a meal, you get a high blood sugar, you don't do anything about it. Is that kind of like where that happens or no?
I mean, it can, but then you just kind of bump it down, right?
Yeah. So it's just not, the diabetes is just not at the top of your mind when you're having those other struggles.
Right. Yeah. And like when I was in the car, that was during a heat wave. So I'm sure that like fried some of my insulin.
I see. Wow. You make a lot of hard decisions. You'd make a good CEO. A lot of tough stuff gets put in front of you. You're like, well, we're going to have to pick one of these horrible things. Let's go with this. This is the best. You do like, I mean, I grew up poorly, not like you. I do know about choosing between two bad decisions and, you know, which one keeps you going longer. You know what I mean? Like it's not like there's a great decision that leads to a castle where I'm a prince and there's a bad decision and I just have to make the right or wrong one. It's like I have two pretty crappy decisions to make and I just have to decide which one's not as bad. And how does that keep me in the game another day so I have another opportunity to get out of this? Does that sound like some of the stuff you've had to go through?
Yeah, definitely been through a lot worse. Like there's no good choices.
Yeah. I bet you a lot of people don't know about that. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people who grow up halfway decent and go off to college and their big decisions are, you know, do I want to live in this apartment over here or this apartment over there? And, you know, that kind of stuff where when you're trying to decide like, well, I'll move into my car because I can get away from the abusive guy that's with the roommate, but then my insulin's not going to be refrigerated and my daughter's going to be living in a car. But that's better than this. Like it. That's a lot of like running from lava is what it feels like to me all the time. Like, you know, like I can't stay here because I'm going to burn, but I got to go somewhere else. There's not a lot of good options. Just it's an intense way to live, you know?
Yeah, I definitely live on the edge.
Yeah. You're like an action star, except with stuff instead of like asteroids.
Right. It's not as cool.
Yeah. You're the Rock if the Rock was being chased by somebody with a stick. That's basically it. But you're doing really well. God, I've never said this before because it sounds so just stupid, but I think in your situation, it's not a bad question. Where do you see yourself a year from now?
A year from now, I should be graduated from the apprenticeship. I'll probably make too much for like moderate income housing. So I'll probably be with like a private landlord and, you know, trying to save up to buy a house.
Yeah. Good for you. That's really cool. I mean, you know, I'm going to share something with you that is almost apropos of nothing. But at the same time, I've had conversations with people in their 50s and 60s who had really like bad events in their life. Like stuff that stretched out over decades. And I want you to know that when they're in their 50s and 60s, when they look back on this time, they don't remember it that poorly. It's interesting. And I have an episode that's not out yet, but I think I can make sure it comes out before yours. So there's this older woman and she's got type 1 and she's telling me this story. Like, I don't know where this story's going. All right, damn. So like, I have no idea. But at some point, she's talking about being molested by a family member when she's like 10 years old. And I think, like, gosh, this must be a defining moment in her life. You know what I mean? Like, everything that happens to her must stem out of this horror. And yet, for 45 minutes before that, before she shared that part with me, it was not a story she was telling. Like her life had been good. She had met people and loved them and lost them and met more people and loved them again and accomplished things and had fulfilling work and friends. And it's easy just to think that this is it. Like, this is my story. But once you have the gift of like macro, of like stepping back and seeing the whole thing, you see that it doesn't have to be that way. And you are definitely headed in that direction. Like, if I could somehow stay alive for 30 more years, which I'm pretty sure I can't do, but if I could, and I interviewed you again, I feel like your interview would come off a lot like this woman's that I'm speaking about. Like, yeah, some horrible stuff happened to me, but that's in the past and that doesn't impact today. Like, you feel like you're on that path to me. Does that feel that way to you?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Mm. You know, this is just another bump in the road, essentially.
Mm. That's a great attitude. Well, good for you. I know people who would get mired down in it. And I don't know that I wouldn't be one of them at some points, just bemoaning what's happened to me over and over again and never letting go of it. But you don't seem to have that gear. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, definitely spent a lot of time in therapy, and I've got meds that are good now. So it's actually kind of hard to get depressed anymore.
You're like, listen, I'm in a chemical situation where I'm just happy. There's not much I can do about it. Nothing wrong with anything. That's, you know, nothing wrong with that. And the therapy part, I like how much you're talking about it, because it just, I don't think it's a thing people do, and probably more people than you can imagine would benefit from, you know, some of that, for sure.
Yeah. I think it's more talked about in just the Seattle area.
Yeah.
I feel like, we talk more about, you know, going to therapy and like being healed, especially like on dating apps, you know, like people will put in there, like, if you haven't been to therapy or you're not working on your, you know, swipe left.
Leave me alone. So we've had such a serious conversation. Do you feel like we've covered it pretty well? Did I miss anything?
I don't know. I suppose I should clarify that, you know, what I've been doing with the Medicaid while I've been getting away with it is most definitely
fraud.
Fraud.
I felt like that was pretty clear, but are you here to say please don't defraud Medicaid unless you really have to?
No.
No. What's your message?
You know, I just want that to be abundantly clear so people don't just go, "Oh, you know, I'm going to take a layoff and tell Medicaid, oh, I took this layoff so I can get on Medicaid." It's like, no, that's not going to work for you. They're going to investigate you 6 months later, and you know, you might have some issues there.
Are you saying that you think you'll have issues down the line, but it's just the best of the bad decisions you had right now, or are you, no?
No, I, you know, they don't really investigate it unless you like advertise it. So,
okay. Well, we haven't used your name. So, I mean, good luck. Go find a mom in Seattle that's on Medicaid and go get her, because you're not going to figure out who this
well,
is.
Well, I mean, you do have my full legal name.
Oh, you think I'm telling here, somebody?
So totally,
I'm not telling anybody.
You totally could if you wanted to.
Can you imagine they rolled up here, like strong arm me for your name? That'd be crazy. I would really think my podcast was popular if that happened. That's the first thing I want you to know. I'd be like, God damn, I am reaching people. Okay, so listen, if you're listening from the government and you have type 1, just be cool, okay? Let it go. Can I delve into a little bit about what's in your note, or do you think it's too much of a juxtaposition for the conversation? Because I feel like it connects a little bit, but I don't want to talk about it if you're not comfortable.
Yeah, we could talk about it.
All right. So when I get a, like, you know, what's your connection to diabetes? Have you been on a type 1 podcast in the last 6 months? What are some of the items that you hope to talk about? You just said BDSM kink from a type 1 point of view. And then we got on today and I was like, that is not what we're talking about. So I did a great job adjusting. I think everyone can see that now. But I mean, seriously, right? You were like, you want to talk about like just, you know, S&M and stuff? And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And then you got on, you're like, instead, would you like to talk about like physical and sexual abuse? I'm like, okay, I can pivot. But it was like 9 o'clock in the morning at the time. So I was like, I can do this. But then I realized it was like six in the morning when you and I were starting to talk, right? For you?
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, if she can do it, I can do it. Is that a lifestyle that you have been into for a long time?
Yeah. I'd say, you know, maybe just before my daughter was born, maybe 6 years.
Was that with the guy you were with, or is it a bigger group of people?
No, it's a community for sure.
Okay. And so you're going to have to help me here, damsel, because this is not going to be something I can even guess my way through. We all go to a party, and I guess let's define it first. What's BDSM mean?
B is bondage, D is domination, S is sadism, M is masochism. I don't know. I feel like maybe that's self-explanatory if you look up each one.
Yeah, I'm not going to Google anything right now.
It does encompass more than that. You know, it's impact play, you know, hitting with your hand, spanking, or objects like floggers. It's, you know, bondage with ropes or handcuffs or, you know, even like shrink wrap.
Shrink wrap, like your whole self?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's some people who are really into like mummification.
And then being like having sex then? Or just...
You know, you'd be surprised how much sex doesn't happen.
Okay. Interesting. So, I mean, I think the obvious question here is this a way to take control over things that were happening to you in the past? Like, so you're being abused by people, but now you can be in control of it. Like, there's abuse, but it's not harming you. You're in control of when it starts and stops. Is it a control thing?
No, I don't think so.
No? And
I mean, I wouldn't define it as abused either. I think I would like being spanked whether, you know, I had been through what I was through or not.
I gotcha. I let me just first say, I've never been spanked sexually, so I'm not sure what I would think of it. I'm not judging it. But I also don't know how to like ask Kelly about that. So I don't know that I'm ever going to have an answer for any of you. Can you imagine? I was like, hey, I did a podcast the other day. And I was wondering, in a sexual situation, can you just smack me to see if I'm good with this or not? I don't know. So that's not a reasonable leap to you then. How does it start? How do you first become aware that that's something that's interesting to you?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it's just a matter of trying it.
So are you saying that, like, so what's your particular, is kink the right word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the thing you, like, what's your go-to?
I love impact, and that incorporates all kinds of like striking the body.
Okay. With like those little floggers you're talking about or something like that, or a hand?
Yeah, a hand, a flogger, a whip, even like a fist.
So punched, like, I don't know how you punch playfully, but that's what you're talking about. Like, you're not talking about somebody like rearing back and decking you, right?
Yeah, not usually. I've seen, you know, one scene where it definitely seemed that way, and it was, you know, so concerning to me that I had to go.
Oh, really?
See the dungeon monitor and be like, "Are you aware of this? Have they talked to you about what they've agreed to?" And they're like, "Yeah, no, it was cool. If you can't handle it, go over here. Here's the stuffy."
Damsel, damn you for bringing up such serious stuff on this podcast and keeping me from being able to call this episode Dungeon Monitor. I really, you screwed me on that one. I'm not going to lie to you. Because that would be a great name for the episode. When you said there's a Dungeon Monitor, I was like, get the hell out of here. Is there really? That's fantastic. That, I don't know, tickled me. So for you, you want that, the impact stuff. Do you want it during intercourse or not necessarily?
No, definitely not. That's not for me.
So prior to, or not even in conjunction with?
It depends. If, you know, this is a sexual partner, then, you know, maybe. But if this is someone I just met or a good friend, then no, probably not.
Okay. So these things do not need to be connected to sex, actually.
No, they don't need to be connected to sex or romance or anything.
Do they
like that
for you? Are they more frequently not connected or connected?
I'd say more frequently not.
Okay. So if you and I are dating, you might say to me, what? Hey, Scott, after we watch The Wall tonight, can you, what are you looking for? You're like, I don't know. After The Wall.
I mean, I'm guessing you're vanilla and I'd have to respect that.
No. Listen, let's say I'm up for it. I'm whatever you want. I'm there. We're together. Okay. In this scenario. So I'm good. I know the deal. Like I've met you. I heard the car story. I know you're bipolar. I'm in. Okay. Like, so like I'm here. What are you looking for?
I don't know. I guess in my mind, I definitely separate like kink and sex and romance. You know, I prefer like polyamorous relationships.
Okay.
So, you know, those things can remain separate as well.
Mm-hmm. So what if it wasn't sexual? You were just like, you wanted the impact stuff. Like, what would you like, would you leave it to me? Or would you be like, look, I need you to slap me here or pinch me or that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, I guess I would probably ask you if you wanted to negotiate a BDSM scene.
Oh, okay. So we'd pre-plan it and then act it out.
Essentially.
All right. You understand, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just doing my best to try to get it out of you because I don't know. I'm swinging wildly here into the darkness. Not that this is dark, but you understand what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah. So in negotiating, I like to, you know, say what I want to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything outside of that is going to be excluded from what we do at that time.
All right. Let's play this out then. So we're in this situation. Let's negotiate. How does this start? You say, hey, I'm up for something tonight. I go, all right, I am too. What are you looking for?
Yeah.
It's not as easy when you have to say it out loud, is it?
No, it's not, especially on like the
someone's listening.
The sub side too.
So are you a sub?
Yeah, more towards sub. I'd say I'm a bottom. And the differentiation between that is like the bottom is the act of receiving,
mm-hmm.
whereas a sub is like a power thing. You are giving power to the dominant or giving power to the top.
So is this a situation where you basically signal to, again, we've watched The Wall, and I only bring this up because it's my favorite nighttime game show, because I love, for some reason, damsel, let me tell you something, I get as much joy out of watching people lose money as I do watching them win it. So like, there's part of me that likes to watch them get like $1 million and then watch it go away. I'm like, ha, 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 you lost. I don't know what that says about me. Doesn't matter. So we're done watching that. And you make the signal to me that you're up for shenanigans. And then it's kind of on me to like move forward with it. You're not going to tell me what you want. You just, you've given me the nod and now it's on me to come do what I'm going to do.
No. So
no?
We would negotiate and you'd say, okay, what do you want? What are you in the mood for? And I'd say something like, oh, you know, maybe a little rope play and impact. And you'd say, okay, for rope, or are you okay with us doing something maybe like a chest harness? Or are you thinking of doing maybe some suspensions or,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of evaluating what equipment you have to work with and, you know, taking into consideration, you know, maybe some health limitations.
Yeah. So we're looking at like making a harness to suspend you if we can, or you said chest harness. So like, I'm so sorry. Am I wrapping this like around your breast or the rope or
right.
get, like sort of like, what am I trying to say? Like confine them like a, ooh, like, you know, when those guys do the, at the parties, the birthday parties, they make the balloon animals.
Oh, yeah. No, you can definitely make them pop out like balloons.
That's the vibe. Okay. See, I'm figuring it out. Don't you worry. And okay, so you might be up. By the way, where do we keep the ropes in the car when we're living in the car? They got to be in the trunk, right?
In the trunk, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's definitely suspicious. Especially with my tools and my shovel back there.
You pulled over. You got a bunch of construction stuff and a bunch of ropes. And the cop's like, hey, what's going on here? And you're like, let me tell you about my chest harness fantasy. And then he's like, just go. I don't care. But okay. So, all right. So we negotiate all this. I've got a hook. I got you hanging up. Your boobs look like hot dogs from like a party balloon. And then I just give you some wax.
Yeah. If that's, all stuff I said that I wanted.
If it's in the negotiation, right. We do the business, but then you and I are not like, it doesn't necessarily need to be sexual then.
No.
What do you get out of it when it's not sexual?
It's definitely a rush of chemicals.
Okay.
Yeah, it really gets the adrenaline up. I forget what that hormone is after the cortisol comes to where it kind of helps calm you down.
Okay. I was going to say, do you get fight or flight or no?
No. There's just kind of a mindset you get into. For me, it would be subspace, to where I just feel really light and mm-hmm. pretty happy.
So when this is over, like, you're in the light happy place and you're still swinging like a ham in a butcher shop. And I say to you, I say to you, damsel, I'm really turned on. I want to have sex. Are you up for that? You might say yes and you might say no.
Right.
Or no.
For me, yeah. if it's something that wasn't negotiated before.
We can't bring it up afterwards.
As what we call aftercare, then we're not changing it. Because, okay. You know, if you're in that mindset, that's also influencing your decisions.
So let's say we negotiate it, but then we're done. And I go, damsel, I'm tired here. I don't want to do the sexy part anymore. Are you okay with that? Or are you going to be like, yo, I was planning for that part? Do something.
No, you definitely can't do that.
That's I can't bail. I can't bail. I can't be like, I'm tired from
no.
all this.
Oh, no. You can't be like, I wasn't planning on that. We need to have sex right now. Like, that's not.
Okay.
That's not sexy. That's not consent.
I'm just trying to say, like, what if we can, I spoke. I'm saying we already talked about it. We've consented. We're going to have sex at the end. And then I'm so tired, I have to bail. And I'm like, I can't do this. Like, hoisting you up here really took a lot out of me. And so, like, I just, not to say that you are heavy, but you know what I mean? Like, just, I'm imagining it's a lot of work. And so, like, now I'm all like, oh, I smacked her ass. I did all the stuff I was supposed to do. I'm tired. I don't want to have sex anymore. Would you be mad or no? Would you
no.
be? No. No, you'd be all right.
No. You know, the great thing about consenting to sex is you can always not consent anymore.
Sure. So I removed my consent. So you'd be cool with that. What if the rope play was in reverse? Where do you put the rope on me?
Well, really, there's just the same. It's a body, you know, just different parts.
Mm-hmm. Same rope? Or is there a different rope? Is there rope and rope or no? Same rope.
No.
Same rope.
No, gotcha. It's just up to personal preference. There's all kinds of rope that people like to use. Some like more silky materials and some like more scratchy materials.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Can I just
come out and ask a bold question?
Mm-hmm.
You ever peg a guy?
Yes.
Because they asked or because you wanted to?
Well, both.
Uh-huh.
You have to have both to make it happen, right?
I guess so. You're making a point. Okay. So that's a thing you're up for, if they're up for it.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. I just figured we'd go completely into making this an After Dark and just, like, let me just get all my questions out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Is it, you used the word, I'm going to sound old for a second. You said polyamorous. Can you define that for me?
Ethically having multiple relationships that are usually like full on, like boyfriend, girlfriend relationship, husband, wife relationship, just with multiple people.
More than one person. Okay. Can you have a kink relationship with one person and a completely like, leave it to beaver relationship with another person? Like, is that a thing? Could you separate those things?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Have you ever had multiple relationships at one time?
Yes. At one time, I think when I first contacted you, I had a boyfriend who was vanilla. I had a joy friend that was kinky. And then I had a regular pop. That was kinky.
Hmm. Three different, and these all men or are there women in there?
There was two men and one non-binary.
Gotcha. All right. When you moved in with a roommate, was that going to be a sexual relationship or no?
No.
No, that was just a roommate thing. Gotcha. How do you put the bat signal up for this? Like, how the hell do you find other people like who are interested in this too? Is it like the internet? Is that where we do this or are there code words?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you wanted to, I'd, you know, ask your wife first, but, you know, you could get on FetLife and it's FetLife.com and you make a profile and just kind of look through the local events.
Mm-hmm.
And you can message people, but it's better just to go to the events and meet in person, I feel like.
Pop up Fet, F-E-T?
Yes, F-E-T-L-I-F-E .com.
Free plug. There you go.
Advertisers will love that.
Oh, there's not going to be any advertising on this one. Don't worry. Okay. You made it onto the official subscribers only episode. The rest of it will be bleeped out and given to somebody for an after dark. Do you ever get there and I don't know how to say this. I'm not judging anybody, but what if you get there and people are heinous? You know what I mean? Like, does that matter? Does body style matter, or does the kink matter? Or do you have to be attracted for it to work?
You know, it varies person to person, but I'd say for a lot of pickup play where you're just meeting somebody and then negotiating with them, that it doesn't matter because it's more of a friendly.
Yeah. Like you're playing pinochle together or chess in the park or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, no. I know what you're saying. Okay. So there's a thing you both like to do. You need another person to do it. Doesn't really matter who they are. You're just going to do the thing. Is the negotiation exciting to you?
It can be, especially when you're just meeting someone new and it's like, oh, I wouldn't guess that you were into that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me try that.
Now I'm wondering about all the people I know. Which one of them are doing this? How do I find out? I need to know. Damsel, I'm serious. I need a McCarthy style hearing of all the people I know. That's probably a very old reference that you don't get, but don't worry about it. And where I find out everybody's kinky like backstories. Even those of you listening, immediately you should. I'm wondering about you all too. Do you think there are mostly people thinking, I don't know what this lady's talking about? Or do you think there's more people who are like, yeah, I'm into this too, that I just don't know about?
Oh my gosh, the community has so many diabetics.
Oh, interesting. Type 1 specifically?
I've met one type 1, and then I've met maybe 7 diabetics.
Type 2.
Some of them were type 2, and then the rest just didn't disclose.
Huh. Okay. Interesting. I don't know if there's a correlation there or not, but that's still very interesting. Have you ever met somebody you've known? Have you ever gone to an event? They're called events.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Have you ever gone to an event and looked across the room and been like, oh, hell, that's my third grade teacher or something like that?
No, not that closely. But I mean, if you're there just at the right time, you know, you might see like a city council person or.
Lovely. This is what I'm talking about. Okay.
But I mean, if you know them, you don't know them, right?
Yeah. Are there a lot of people who, if I saw them in their street clothes, there's no way I'd ever guess this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are you one of those people?
Especially the older people.
Oh, yeah? Because it's like, oh, there's grandmom. But no, she's got a whip. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. There's quite a few from like the boomer and like later Gen X generation that go to events because they're empty nesters now. They have all this time to actually do it.
Yeah. I'm going to ask my wife. I'm going to say, she's not here right now. She's traveling for work. I'm going to ask her. I'm going to be like, hey, is it possible you have like any like kinky leanings towards this stuff? And I just have never asked. Maybe I should ask. What do you think she's going to say return? You know what she's going to tell me?
You know, I don't know.
I've been married for 27 years. She's going to walk away from me and not say a word. She's going to be like, and then a half an hour later, she's going to be like, what did you talk about on the podcast that made you ask me that? And then I'm about to I'll be like, well, you're going to want to like, you know what I'm going to call your episode, by the way?
What?
Damsel Not in Distress. It's good, right?
I love it.
Yeah. Because you seem like, for a person who's been through a lot of stuff, you seem like the least in distress person I've ever met. And you asked me to call you damsel, so that's what I'm going to call it. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that works.
Look at me negotiating and asking permission all of a sudden. I was like, is this how I have to do everything? I'm going to go to lunch today. I'll be like, would you like me to sit here or should I sit there? I'm going to get all like that. I am having lunch with a friend in an hour.
Okay. Yeah, you should totally like slap the butt of the seat before you sit down.
Oh my gosh.
Be good.
Do you get judged by people on this? Like, well, let me ask my one question. I'll get the, you listen to, I mean, there's no way you don't listen to the podcast. That's how you found out about it, right?
Oh yeah, I listen.
Oh, okay. So like, do you get judged by people? Are there times in your life where they find out stuff about you and you feel judged? And here's my question. Have you felt more judged by being bipolar, by enjoying an S&M lifestyle or having diabetes?
Ooh, that is a good question.
It's one of the best questions I've ever asked. This is one of the best interviews I've ever done, but go ahead.
Let's see. Well, not a whole lot of people know that I'm kinky. So, I mean, they can't really judge. Mm-hmm. And I try very, very hard not to use my real first name in the community.
Right.
So I think, you know, maybe I'm judged more about the diabetes because I'm so open about it.
So more people can see it.
Like, I love wearing my Dexcom just out on my arm.
Yeah.
Just being like, what's up?
Hey, there's no way you could tell guys at a job site about the S&M thing, right? Because that would just open a floodgate. They'd be horrible to you, I'm imagining, right?
Yeah, I've been open about it before on other job sites, and it was kind of like, oh, you know, she must be a freak. I've got a chance with her, you know?
Everyone takes a run at you once they know?
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Not surprising, just interesting. Yeah, so that, I mean, there's a place I would keep it to myself. I'm pretty sure. I'm thinking about myself here. If I was a lady and I was at a job site and like that kind of stuff. Okay, well, we've done it, damsel. This is, I'm going to tell you right now, officially the best podcast I've ever made in my life. So you were, and it's because you're so open and you were willing to talk about so many different things so honestly. Were you pretty nervous in the beginning?
Not really. I smoked a cigarette just before and
yeah, a little of nicotine
was
rush,
able to collect okay? myself.
Yeah, and nicotine works. Don't tell the kids. Yeah, don't tell children that. But that little jolt you get from it's not bad, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's the smoking part that's not great, and the addiction and all the other stuff. But whatever. Listen, one mountain at a time. Am I right?
Right.
Yeah. Let's not get crazy here and try to fix the whole world at once.
Yeah, maybe I'll quit smoking after I, you know, get an apartment.
That's the funniest thing anyone's ever said on here. Congratulations. Way to joke about being homeless and do it in a fun way. That was really well done. It seriously was. You're like, maybe I'll smoke after I get an apartment. Let's prioritize a little bit. That's fantastic. You were terrific. I usually say goodbye and then like tell you people they were terrific afterwards, but you were really good. I mean, your life is significantly different than mine, obviously. So I enjoyed listening to your stories and hearing about them and learning more about it. I can't thank you enough for sharing all this with me and with everybody listening. Thank you, really, sincerely.
Yeah, thanks.
I like how you're just like, yeah, cool, it's fine. You don't, so like, we're
my,
done.
My heart is smiling so big. It's probably the meds, you know, I can't go too far up or down.
So, I mean, we're done, but I want to ask you just one more question. I'm going to keep recording. So for people who are not into this at all, what do you expect that they're, reaction would be to hearing your story?
Well, it's kind of like we did two episodes in one, right?
We did. This was weird. I'm not gonna lie to you, but it's your life, so you know. But well, just put the kink thing out there first. If people heard about that, like, just you call them vanilla, like, so you people who don't have those thoughts or do and they're not doing anything about it. If they hear this, do you think it sounds weird to them? Do you think it sounds freeing? Do you think they would judge it if they knew?
You know, I think most people would judge it, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a interesting niche, but I think there's also a lot of people who would be, you know, more interested.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe want to explore it.
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I've been married for a long time. I'd love to slap my wife. I don't. I mean, once we negotiated it and she was something she that's something she wanted. Just, oh my God. You have to be married for a really long time to know about those moments where you look at each other, you're like, maybe I could choke you. And they look back at you like, yeah, come over here and try. I'll choke you back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just you
maybe
gotta be married
switch
a,
then.
You gotta be married a really long time, really, to imagine this. Like, you trust me, you'll know when you're like 60. But I guess I should ask, do you like being choked?
That takes a lot of trust in somebody just because it's so risky.
Delicate too, right? Yeah.
So I love it, but I don't do it a lot.
You need the right person.
And I don't do it with anyone.
Okay. Do you ever do it to yourself? Does this move into your, all right, here I go. I know I said this is over, but does this move into your masturbation at all? Ever hit yourself?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sorry with me. I'm just wondering. What about away from sexuality? Do you ever, like, have you ever done it just the impact stuff? No sexuality by yourself? Can you self-impact?
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm told to, you know, smack, I will.
No? Okay. If I tell you to, not me, but if we're together and we've talked about it ahead of time, I'm like, at some point during this, I'm going to tell you to smack yourself. You're going to do it. But you wouldn't do it like in bed.
Yeah, I would do it.
In bed to just chill out at night?
No, probably not.
Okay. All right. I've asked a bad question. That's okay. I'm doing my best here. How did I handle this? Seriously, I'll let you go in a minute. But like, did I do okay? Because this is a big shift from topics, and I want to make sure you're comfortable.
Yeah, no, that was beautiful. I'm just glad I had enough time to
dig in.
Do both, I guess.
Yes,
that's really awesome.
No, I appreciate it. Listen, I wasn't going to stop talking to you. You're fascinating. So, and you're really honest, and it's hard to find. So, thank you very much. I'm going to let you go. Hold on 1 second for me. Mark is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. Don't forget, we still have Mark's conversation at the very end. It's a terrific kind of mini episode, about 10 minutes long, that goes deeper into some of the things that you heard Mark talking about earlier in the show. A huge thank you to Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Are you tired of having to change your sensor every 7 to 14 days? With the Eversense CGM, you just replace it once every 6 months via a simple in-office visit. Learn more and get started today at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. A huge thank you to one of today's sponsors, Gvoke Glucagon. Find out more about Gvoke HypoPen at gvokeglucagon.com/juicebox. You spell that GVOKEGLUCAGON.com/juicebox. If you're living with type 1 diabetes, the After Dark collection from the Juice Box podcast is the only place to hear the stories that no one else talks about. From drugs to depression, self-harm, trauma, addiction, and so much more. Go to juiceboxpodcast.com, up in the menu, and click on After Dark. There you'll see a full list of all of the After Dark episodes. If you're looking for community around type 1 diabetes, check out the Juice Box Podcast private Facebook group, Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. But everybody is welcome. Type 1, Type 2, gestational, loved ones, it doesn't matter to me. If you're impacted by diabetes and you're looking for support, comfort, or community, check out Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording. WrongWayRecording.com.